Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Buckhead Business Radio Show.
All right, good morning, Buckhead and beyond. Rich Casanova here for another exciting episode of Buckhead Business Radio X, brought to you by Atlanta Business Networking, listing over 100 networking events throughout the city, and the Ritz Group, which is a crowdfunding organization bringing money to here in Buckhead, and also Crown Office Suites, our facility here in Buckhead. And we have a great panel of experts. We're going to call you guys all experts. We just took a vote from our audience, and everybody decided. Everybody in the room this morning, congratulations, you're an expert. Yeah. So we're going to just say hi to all the folks, and we're going to begin with our first interview. But so we have Chuck Wolf joining us in the studio. Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning.
And excited to have you here. So you have some exciting news to announce, right?
I do.
Always something new up his sleeve.
I do.
All right, and we have Mike. How are you this morning, Mike?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Okay. And can you pronounce all the names in your CPA firm?
Yes. Although it's even wrong. It's actually wrong on my voicemail, but it's Abiff, Arrogetti, and Wynn.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. Okay. That was just a test. Didn't mean to put you on the spot. But most people just call you guys H A and W.
That's right.
Yeah. That's easier. Yeah. All right. And Justin, welcome to the studio here with Justin Owen and Owen Security.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be on the show with you.
Maybe our longest drive this morning, right? Are you still up in what part of the city?
Came from Cobb County, North Cobb.
Okay, not too bad. I thought it was somewhere else.
Not too bad.
Yeah, not too bad. And Rio, welcome to the show. How are you this morning?
Yeah, welcome.
Yep. Welcome back to the studio. You were just here just doing our studio tour last week, right?
Absolutely, yes. Very excited.
But ours are only $1.50 as compared to CNN or whatever they. So welcome to the show. Yeah. And you got a new venture you're launching here as well, right?
That's correct.
Project underway.
Yes.
Awesome, awesome. And finally, joining us in the studio, we also have Holland R. Dutch Earl. What most people just call you?
Just Dutch.
Just Dutch.
Dutch is fine.
All right, nice. Yeah. All right, so, and we look forward to hearing from your story as well. Let's first of all begin with our first guest in the studio this morning, and that would be Chuck Wolf. Welcome back. How have you been doing so far?
Doing great.
What have you been doing since last time we spoke? Yeah.
Well, last time I spoke, I probably had a bunch of stores, Wolf Camera stores. And now, since I sold about 14 years ago, I've been in the advertising business, marketing business, and enjoyed that. And I'm doing my last hurrah, though, with cameras, but not selling cameras.
Okay. Because you're most, tell me a little bit of your backstory, because you had an uncle, Ed Ritz.
Right.
In 74.
Right.
And he traded his stock in for 9 stores. That grew into, you ultimately opened in 97, was your 300th
store? Well, around,
for under,
at the end,
Wolf, yeah.
Before I bought Fox Photo, I had 350 stores in 98, and it went up to about 700 stores.
Wow.
When I left.
Yeah, that's crazy. So life's a little easier now, right? Without those 700.
Much easier. No inventory, but just a lot of fun right now.
Yeah, yeah. So, but so you're back. The big news is you're back in the photography business, right?
Right. Well,
so what kind of drew you back?
Not selling cameras.
Right.
It's all computers. It's all Photoshop specialists in the stores and professional photographers, and got a great location in Buckhead, and right next to Johnny's Hideaway. So that's, I don't need an address.
Right.
Everybody heard of Johnny's
nice.
Hideaway. And you go in, and it's really just getting the images. I don't call them pictures until they're printed.
Sure.
So we are printing a lot of images off all the smartphones and media cards and computers and iPads and so on. And it's amazing. Right now, there are billions and billions of pictures, not pictures, excuse
right.
me, images taken every day, but not everyone is printing. So we're getting the excitement to, instead of buying art for your wall or putting something else out, is to take prints. And we're having a lot of different types of frames in the store, and we blow up pictures to even 5 by 8 feet, as low as 4 by 6, you know, inches. And everybody enjoys it, and they bring in 50, 100 prints, and we make photo books now, because you don't do many, you know, albums now.
Right, right.
And it's really growing. I've only been open about 7 weeks.
Oh, really?
And haven't marketed very much, but it's been doing very well by word of mouth, and we expect to have a grand opening in about another 3 weeks. So we're excited.
Well, you're on Radio X, so the world knows now. You better hire some more people right away, Chuck.
Yeah.
So you are, is there plans to then expand this to other locations or whatever?
Well, for sure. Yeah. This is the test store.
Yeah, sure.
And I had a few friends of mine, you know, invest in it as partners. And I say I'm still in the marketing advertising business,
yeah.
Okay? I have quite a few accounts, all retail accounts, that there's other things than cameras in the world. I've been in it for 40 years, so it's
wow.
fun. But now this is my last hurrah. And I'd like to, you know, probably put around – I had 70 stores in Atlanta at one time.
Jeez.
I have one right now. And there's one called Wolf Camera, but it's not bought by me. It's not okay. owned by me. It was my cousin's. He went out of business that purchased my stores. So that's why I had to call it Chuck Wolf's Photo Design Bar.
Right, yeah.
Because I couldn't use that name.
Yeah. And but speaking of, you know, your past life, if you will, mm-hmm. and all those stores, so, I mean – what kind of volume? I mean, what was some of the numbers involved in that or whatever, you know, like
my
expansion?
Wolf Camera used to be almost $1 billion in business.
Wow.
Now that I'm out, I can tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay?
Yeah.
And this one, what was it, $20 a day, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Wow.
Now it's going to get bigger than that. But I would like to open about 12 to 15 stores in Atlanta and see, you know, might franchise it or, you know,
yeah.
or sell it. But I have kids, so
yeah.
they could take over. So it's going to be fun.
Well, it is kind of the next logical evolution, right? Because you hit right on it at the you know top of the conversation that we do have all these images floating around, you know, social media, everybody has their smartphones, whatever, right? And it brings a smile to your face when you see that, right? Or it triggers some emotion of some sort, right?
Exactly.
And yet they're gone. It's just as quick as you take them.
Yeah,
right?
Well, memories are supposed to be kept. You know,
yeah, yeah.
Supposed to be, if you have a fire, the first thing you say besides your kids and your family
right.
are your photos. And so we're scanning a lot of photos and putting them on DVDs so it's easier and you might not, you know, be disappear and you put into a safe. But we do everything from photo shots to the large photos, but a lot of education. We have classes every day on photography and doing things with
oh,
your
really?
iPhone.
Right there in the store?
Right whatever. Here in the store, right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting. And so when they take so they can take also old images, you're saying, from what type
of? We're doing restoration. We just did someone that their grandfather was in World War II, and it was all completely in four different parts, you
right.
know, torn.
Oh, wow.
And we made it a perfect photo. So
wow.
we restore. We do a lot of different things, and anything to do with images, and,
yeah.
and that's what people want. But a lot of people want to do photo books.
Yeah.
And they say 83% of the people that try to do a photo book give up. So what we do is when they come in the store, we hold their hand and do it with them. Or we'll do the whole thing for them for a little fee.
Right. Yeah.
And so that's great because I have done it. And it's confusing and it's time consuming.
Right.
And we have Photoshop experts that make it even better.
Nice.
So they're seeing the images are better and also better positioned in the photo book.
Our family needs the Photoshop. I'm not saying who, whatever, but yes.
Some but I'll give you my card before we
okay,
leave. Okay.
Nice. So the photo books, I do remember. I think most people in the studio here remember the old days. You had photo albums, whatever, right? And a lot of times there were Polaroids or just old snapshots in there, but they would fade over time and they get stuck to the pages and all that stuff. And, so it's kind of like, and people will hold on to those. I mean, right?
Yeah. Well, you really do these photo books for a big vacation and,
right.
and so on like that. And the frames and the pictures, you know, individually, you know, for a weekend or whatever.
Right.
But they don't fade. You're right. And
yeah.
they're forever. And we also can up to 12 by 18, which is large, 4 by 6, 12 by 18, do it in 20 minutes in a store.
Jeez.
Any photo. So a lot of people are coming in for quick photos or business shots and so on like that.
Well, that was my next question. There could be like an application for the business consumer for like corporate events or retreats or events
exactly.
or company functions.
Exactly.
Whatever, right?
Exactly. We're going after the business world too, well, you know, B2B.
Well.
And what the big thing is that I you remember the TV show This Is Your Life.
Yeah, yeah.
How about a 40th or 50th birthday that they give a surprise? The husband gives the wife, or the wife gives the husband, and it's really a book on your life from when you were born, when you went to school, when you had kids, when you got married, and not in that order, probably.
Right. right.
But and your whole life, and then I have someone that is a great writer. For the Atlanta Business Chronicle, if I can say that word.
Oh, yeah, go for it. Yeah,
that
yeah.
wants to, you know, do the writing of the life, you know, so she's a really good copywriter.
Who is that,
and,
by the way?
I forgot her name.
Okay.
Because
okay. I know a few people over there, whatever. Yeah, so that's another interesting spin. So what type of associates do you have working in the photo design bar team, whatever.
Well, there's two from Apple. They've been working for Apple for 2 or 3 years. Well, they're into the social, much younger than I am. Right. They're all, I think the oldest person I have working there is 27.
Wow.
Okay. And then I, of course, when you put me in there, it really gets the average up. But that's what it is. It's the young kids and the young wives and the households that have, you know, kids. I'm involved with the PTA. You know, we're trying to have the PTAs. We want to give them money. They always need money.
Right.
And have all the kids and teachers and the students put pictures on our cloud. And at the end of the year, they pick those pictures. So they have a yearbook that is with what they want. They're
right.
A football team.
Custom,
if they don't play football, they don't put football. They play basketball or track and so on. So that's good. And their classes and their, you know, so it's going to be interesting.
So as opposed to in the old days, you could just put an X through somebody's photo in the photo book.
Exactly.
Now you don't even have to include them, whatever.
Now, they include the people and the classmates that
that's
they're really interested in.
Yeah.
Of course, we'll put the regular ones on the principals and the classes and the teachers, but we're going to try to do that too.
So finally, just to kind of wrap my head around this, so folks can go into the store right there on Roswell Road in Johnny Hideaway. Is it across the street?
No,
or
it's
in
right.
The same?
Two doors down.
Okay, perfect. Mm-hmm. So everybody knows where that's at. And then finally, so they can come in there, but can they do, there's an online application as well?
The online is, well, we have a website right now. It's going to be live in 4 weeks. I said we just started, where you just upload your picture and or pictures, do your photo books or whatever you want. Buy a 20 by 20 frame print, all framed and everything, and pick it up in the store in a couple of days, or the pictures that I say we do in the store up to 12 by 18, they can pick up in 20 minutes. So they can do all their pictures, come down, and that's a one-shot thing. So they'll be able to buy everything online.
Right.
But right now, they come in and they use the machines, but we help them use the machines. I said, we hold your hand. That's my thing. We hold your hand because it's complicated.
Well, you kinda
and
got,
it's fun.
You kind of got the trifecta there, the best of all three, right? Because you can go online, which most people are somewhat familiar with that. And sometimes it's fairly easy, but sometimes you hit a, you know, if you're not that savvy on a scale of 1 to 10, you need some help. If you live right here in Atlanta, you can just drive over and kind of finish the project, right? But if you want to go in there, you can have it done, or you guys can do it entirely for me.
Exactly. And that's what we like to do.
I like that. Mm-hmm. So, how would people find out other than going to the store? What's your website? Do you have a domain name?
It's Photo Design Bar.
Okay.
Or ChuckWolfsPhotoDesignBar.com. And we have our site, you know, website there. And we're going to really, we've been doing a lot of social media right now, and people have been coming in from that, you know, from Facebook and Twitter and all of them. So it's very difficult. I found out when I had 70 stores, all I do is run an ad, you know, the Journal Constitution full page.
Right.
And now I can't afford that.
Yeah, no doubt.
Right. And it doesn't work as well.
Yeah. Good stuff. So appreciate you being here. And for our listeners, remember, it's a bar in Buckhead, but it's not that kind of bar.
No,
whatever.
I do serve free water and coffee.
and
Diet Cokes.
If you want an adult beverage, you can go next door, two doors down.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, Chuck, it was a pleasure meeting you in person and hearing your new story and what's going on.
So, I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for being here. So all your information will be on the website as well for our listeners. And so next in the studio, we have Michael Blake. We spoke with just a few moments ago and with H-A-N-W. I got that right. That I can handle it, right? So a little bit about yourself. Tell the listeners, I was reading through your bio. You have quite a lot going on. So what are some highlights here besides your 15 years of experience and evaluation experience, which we're going to talk about on the radio this morning? But, you've traveled in Russia, Israel, and Ukraine.
Yeah. All the fun places, all the fun, really safe places in the world. That's where I go. And particularly, I like climactic extremes. So those are the countries I tend to visit. So,
And you have a background in economics and French?
Yes. So happy Bastille Day to everybody who was celebrating it yesterday.
Nice. You didn't send me a card, but I guess I'll let you off the hook since we didn't know each other. Yeah. So you were also named to Atlanta Business Chronicle's, up and comers list for the top 40 executives under the age of 40. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. I no longer qualify for that.
Yeah. Well, it's good you snuck in under
wire
there. Yeah. So you do some other, you work with the, American Society of Appraisers. And what else is going on in your life?
So my night job is I run a 501c6 nonprofit called Startup Lounge. And a 501c6 means that if you donate money to me, it's not tax deductible, but I have virtually no federal oversight. And that's perfect for somebody who's doing this as kind of a part-time part-time gig.
Yeah.
And Startup Lounge's mission is to support the early stage innovation-driven entrepreneurial community in Georgia with education, advocacy, and helping connect capital, basically check writers, with viable companies that are seeking that capital. We do it all pro bono. Speaking of Russia, we call ourselves venture communists.
And nice.
The reason we call ourselves that is because we don't charge a thing. There are no membership fees. There are no entry fees. There are no fees. There are no surcharges. It's all free. We're all grassroots. We're all volunteers. And we do it because we love it. We're startup junkies and we all need lives. So.
Okay. So now we're going to talk about this idea of, valuation for companies. But before we get into that, I mean, what's some of the misconceptions or what's most misunderstood? Or maybe we should back up and tell us, you know, what does that process look like?
Most people in my field call it, we do business valuation. I actually don't care for that term because valuation just says, we're going to do some procedures and here's a number and I'm not going to take any responsibility for it. So I call myself and I call our group a business appraiser and a business appraisal group.
Yeah.
So my job is to appraise businesses, securities, derivatives, and intellectual property, patents, trademarks, trade secrets, things of that nature. And so just like you, if you were going to sell your house, you'd have your house appraised.
Sure.
You know, smart people who are about to sell their business or buy a business have it appraised. It's our most important asset. You know, it's a good idea to have an idea what the likely market price is going to be for that.
And so I don't know if this is a fair question, but how do you go about determining a value?
Yeah, so, you know, it's part art and part science. And, right. And you start to ask the question, what's the most important misconception about valuation and business appraisal? You know, to me, it's understanding what the limitations of business appraisal is, right? The common thought is that if I appraise a business, I'm giving you the right number. Right. And all our marketing people say, hey, if you want to get the right number, call H&W. Well, you can't, there's no such thing as a right number in business appraisal or business valuation because nobody really knows for certain what that is. God knows what it is. The universe knows what it is, but I don't. The objective of a business appraisal is to develop a credible result, i.e. worthy of belief. And that's a story. And how you get there in terms of methodology, I call those the plot lines of the story, right?
Right.
One plot line could be, what's the cash generating potential of the business, right? When all else fails, follow the cash, baby. If you know where the cash is coming from and you know what the risks are with the cash, chances are good. You can take a good hack at what the fair value of the asset is. And if you're lucky, if you have enough data out there, you can also look at a market methodology, right? What are similar assets selling for?
Right.
If we're selling a McDonald's franchise,
right.
Well, you can probably figure out, you can probably learn what other McDonald's franchises are selling for, or radio stations, or sometimes even patents. You can observe the market. So just like we do every day for our stock portfolios, and we look at them in our 401ks, where you're looking at valuation multiples, you do the same thing for privately held businesses and intangible assets.
I mean, wouldn't one of the primary key indicators be the existence of the business and their track record in history or whatever, right? So are you primarily, is there a window of a length of a business that you typically evaluate or appraise? Or, I mean, you can't appraise a startup, I mean, or the potential of a startup. I mean, it's two different scenarios, right?
Well, I'd actually disagree. I mean, startups have value, right?
Yeah.
And
but it's more of a challenge.
It's certainly more of a challenge, yeah. Right? And in fact, you asked, what's my favorite movie?
Yeah.
A League of Their Own?
Right.
Well, if it were easy, everybody would do it, right? And it's the hard that makes it great. And I think that's one of the key lessons of the movie. That's one of the key lessons of business appraisal. So it is more challenging, and you have to accept there's going to be a little bit more what I call noise around the value result. But nevertheless, again, take a deep breath. Go Zen, follow the cash. If you know where the cash is going to come from, you can assess the riskiness of those cash flows. You can develop a credible result. And you can observe market transactions of startups and venture capital. And same principles apply. You just maybe apply them a little bit differently. And maybe there's a little bit more of a magic eight ball involved in getting to that answer.
Right. Chuck, I imagine over the years you've had a few of your businesses appraised or whatever, right? When you're looking at selling them, right?
Well, I purchased a lot. And you had to get a, you know, result and you're right. You never know what it's worth. There's a lot of hidden things in there that you really don't know.
I mean, this is just from a civilian standpoint, but isn't it like based on the three times the previous revenue? I mean, they're both smiling and shaking their heads. Yes or no?
No.
Well, look, there may be some business that's based on three times revenue, but certainly not all businesses,
okay.
Right? And I make a lot of money. candidly, from folks that buy and sell businesses using rules of thumb just like that.
Right.
Because that rule of thumb is like a broken clock. It's right twice a day. Except the rule of thumb is not right even as accurately as a broken clock. And I make a lot of money unwinding transactions and disputes that were executed because they relied on that rule of thumb.
So ultimately, isn't it just what someone's willing to pay for a company? Is that simple or...
Yeah, that's an investment banker argument. Investment okay. bankers love to make the argument that the business is worth what somebody else is willing to pay for it. So here's the argument against that. I've got this pen. I just took it out of your coffee mug for all you listening. Imagine a pen coming out of a coffee
and
mug.
And we have security cameras here, by the way, too. Yeah.
And
we have
Owen
security here, yeah.
And the people listening can try this at home, by the way. There's nothing dangerous about this. If Chuck buys this from me for $100, this right. pen from me for $100, the investment banker's argument suggests then that this pen is worth $100, right?
Yeah.
Well, we all would look at that and say, well, of course, this pen is not worth $100. I mean, it's a nice pen, but it's not a Mont Blanc or anything. So why isn't it? And the reason that it's not worth $100 is because it's very unlikely that Chuck could turn around and sell it to Dutch or to Rio for $100. That transaction is not replicable. And so one of the biggest fallacies about valuation is that value is what somebody is willing to pay for an asset. Each transaction is different. Each asset is different. And a great way to lose a lot of money or to overpay for an asset is to have that approach that something's worth what somebody else is willing to pay. Just because you're willing to pay for it, that doesn't mean that's what you should pay for it.
Yeah. Well said. You know what you're talking about, obviously. So rumor is that you've looked into the valuation of the Clippers.
Yes.
Walk us through that.
So, you know, Steve Ballmer may or may not be allowed to buy the Clippers, depending on whether or not the courts say that his estranged wife, I mean, you can't make this stuff up, right?
I know, right, yeah.
Jerry Springer ought to be covering this thing, not ESPN. but it's an open question as to whether or not he's going to be allowed to buy the Clippers for $2.0 billion. But it's kind of funny that, you know, you listen to everybody from ESPN to Bloomberg to MSNBC said, oh, $2 billion, that's crazy. The most recent sale was for the Knicks. They're around $1.1 billion. Why would you pay $2 billion for the Clippers? So the fun thing for us to do is, okay, well, let's take a look at it. Steve Ballmer, yeah, I didn't like the Zune. I mean, I really didn't like Vista, so I'm not a huge Steve Ballmer fan. I shorted Microsoft, made some money doing that. But he's not a dumb guy. You don't get to be
right.
head of Microsoft
level,
yeah. if you're a moron.
Right.
Right. You don't stay there for 10 years if you're a moron. So how did he get to that number? And it turns out, it's a 9-page essay. I'm not going to bore everybody here. But if you basically just take the time to sit down, work through the numbers, if you understand that NBA teams have a cartel where their cost of labor is locked in at 50% of revenue, no matter what happens, because they broke the union about a year and a half ago. If you understand that the TV revenues do nothing but go up and there's no marginal cost associated with those revenues, and if you understand that NBA teams on average appreciate about 12% a year just on the resale value, right? Forget about cash flow.
Yeah, right.
Just reselling the darn thing.
Wow.
Then a $2 billion is probably cheap. In fact, he probably could have paid up to $2.5 billion and done all right with that transaction.
See, and that was our prediction here at Business Radio X. I just want to make that clear for the record. Yeah, yeah. Based on your coaching and advice, whatever. Yeah.
And by the way, I'm mad because my $1.8 billion bid was spurned. So you can take that for what it's worth. I may have a little skin in the game.
I hate when that happens, yeah. So so talk to us finally about Uber. It was just recently valued $18 billion. I mean, this blows my mind. The latest VC round. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, how long have they been around even?
You know, they've been around probably 4 or 5 years
That's
or so. They've been
insane.
In Atlanta for about a year and a half. And the thing about Uber is that when you pay $18 billion for Uber, you're not buying Uber's cash flow.
Right.
You're buying the hope that they're going to do an IPO in 3 years. They're going to be the next Facebook, the next LinkedIn, the next Twitter. I won't put Candy Crush in there because their candy got crushed by the IPO, but you're betting that in 3 years, that's going to be a $50 billion valuation at the IPO. And you know what? It's not crazy. It's not crazy to think that given what recent tech IPOs have been.
But couldn't it be another Groupon though, right?
I mean, the Groupon IPO worked well. I mean, if you bought the IPO and sold, you actually made some money.
Yeah.
The problem was if you bought the IPO and held it, then you're in trouble.
Right. Well, I've enjoyed this conversation. Most of it was over my head, but I enjoyed it, yeah.
Me too, actually.
You too, yeah.
Hopefully somebody will email in and say, I know what those guys are talking about.
No, seriously. I mean, I was joking, but seriously, I mean, I not only impressed with your knowledge, but the way you're able to communicate it. And I was I didn't feel lost. That was, you know, usually I do, right?
You know, what I tell people is, I teach classes on valuation to attorneys, who many of whom got into that profession to run away from numbers, right? If they were good at numbers, a lot of them would be engineers instead. I was a French major. I'm a liberal arts guy. So if I can understand this, anybody can understand it. You just have to, if you accept the fact that more is better than less, and less risk is better than more risk, then you can understand finance. It's really not much more complicated than that.
Well, good stuff to know. So, Mike, so tell our listeners and our folks, what's the best way to reach out to you on two fronts, right?
Yep. So, email me at michael.blake@hawcpa.com and follow my Twitter handle at unblakeable.
Yeah. We followed you the other day, whatever. Yeah. And some interesting content there. So I would definitely encourage you all to check that out, as well as all your information will be on the site as well for more details. So, thanks again for being here, Mike. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Yeah. And, so up next we have, Justin Owen. Welcome to the back to the show, Justin.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Enjoy being here with you. And, just real quick, I think Mike has a little bit of case of humbleness over here.
So. Right. Yeah. It'll rub off on you. Watch out. Yeah. But, actually, Justin, we've known each other for quite a while from networking events.
It's been a while.
Yeah. Chamber of Commerce. Haven't seen you in a while. So, I know a little bit about, but fill in some of the blanks here. So you're the second generation owner of Owen Security Solutions, right?
Yep.
And you grew up in the company. You started in outside sales. 2001?
I did. My father started the company back in 1973, so I'm a second generation business owner, and I took it over in the last few years. And you know, security systems is way different now than it was 5, 10, 20 years ago. It's getting pretty exciting now.
It's kind of like your dad in Chuck's era, starting photography and now, you know, reinventing himself, and now you're taking over the helms. And there's amazing stuff going on in the world of security that I think some of us know about, which you're going to elaborate as well on, right? And so let's start the conversation with, so that was a little bit of your background. Where are you originally from? I mean, from Georgia area?
I'm born and raised in Georgia. I grew up in Calhoun, Georgia. Went to Southern Polytech to study technology management. So I didn't see myself taking over the family business. I was always kind of a rebel, wanted to do my own thing, but came to my senses. And, you know, it has its own challenges. It hasn't been a startup, but it's been its own challenges to reinvent some things and kind of put my stamp on it.
Right.
But there's a lot of exciting things happening in the security world.
Bring us up to speed from, you know, what's different, what we knew about 5 years ago, what's going on, you know, today? What are some of the innovative happenings?
There's a lot of different things you can do with a security system now. It used to be, it was just you put your code in, armed it, and hopefully it didn't go off.
That, right.
You know, now you can do so many different things. We're in the commercial and the residential business, but you can do so many things now with a security system. You can, thanks to Apple and Steve Jobs, the iPhone has made the security system just at your fingertips.
Right.
You can log in with an app and arm and disarm remotely. You can pull up a thermostat, change the settings on your home or business. You can lock a door remotely. You can open and close a garage door, turn on a light, a lamp. There's just so many different things that it's really unlimited at this point what you can do from your phone.
But with that technology, I mean, are there challenges or is there issues of someone accessing that or whatever, you know, and, unlocking your vacation home at Hilton Head or whatever, unknowingly or intentionally? Or, I mean, I guess there's all kinds of safeguards.
Yeah, I mean, with everything, you've got new challenges to overcome. With the app, it's just like a keypad. You've got to plug in your code to log in, do that kind of thing. So it's not one of those things that's going to be fumbling in your pocket. Unlock the door. That would be a good situation.
Right.
But, yeah, it's not easy to just hit a button and unlock a door, but certainly, you know, there's going to be new challenges and you know, new scammers out there trying to get into that thing, but it's highly secure. So far we haven't seen anything where somebody's been able to access my system through this highly encrypted technology.
Well, those issues are probably around when the first key was made and cut or whatever, right? Then somebody decided to make a copy or whatever. Yeah. So now how can a security system save money? I mean, you're talking about that, but
that's one of the things that we're trying to bring a unique approach at Owen Security. Not only do we want to, you know, protect lives, families, homes, businesses, we also try to, you know, with these new technologies, we want to bring in a cost savings factor. So, you know, used to everybody had home phone lines. So, you know, with a security system, you can go cellular and you don't need that phone line anymore. But even with these new technologies, we've been creating a solution where let's program that thermostat to follow the security system. When you arm that security system, let's set the temperature back in your home so that you can save some money while you're gone and not have that thing running all day. So that's one example that we can do for a home or business is to be able to the only thing in your home that knows when you're gone is that security system. So
or
that's
your dog.
Exactly. That, yeah. Unless you want to keep the temperature down for your animals, then that might not help you. Right.
But maybe train him how to program it for you, whatever. Right? Yeah. You've seen some of those videos when dogs are left alone by themselves or whatever. It's crazy what they do. But so. From a system owner, what should they monitor? I mean, you talked about the phone line. I mean, is that kind of antiquated? A lot of businesses still have landlines.
Right.
Are there issues or challenges with that?
On a business setting, you know, just security in general is more secure to monitor your system over a wireless or cellular technology just because it's so easy to kill the phone line or cut those lines coming in, whether it's a home or business. For the home perspective, you know, everybody's got their own personal phone now. You don't need a home phone unless you just like telemarketers calling you. So with that aspect, if we can take a system and update it technology-wise and get rid of that phone line, you know, you're basically breaking even at that or saving money on the phone line. So that's the most basic way. But on the energy savings is we really feel like on the business side, if I'm paying the bill, but I'm not the one turning the thermostat off every day, that thermostat could run for, you know, 8-12 hours. So, you know, you could see how quickly that could add up for a business to leave that running all night long.
And so talk to us about a security system protecting lives and, you know, arrest beyond just theft, because a lot of people think about just protecting your, you know, what's inside your house, but.
Right. Well, we like to call it, you know, business management tools or lifestyle management tools. It just makes your life easier, even if you're not a business person, but you know, say you need the HVAC system worked on, but you don't want to take off from work.
Right.
Well, you can get on your phone, pull up the app and unlock the door, disarm the security system for them. So it really allows your lifestyle to kind of free up and give you more flexibility, whatever vendor's coming in your home, let them in, let them do their thing, and then arm the system, lock the door behind them, and you don't have to be there.
Nice.
On the business side of things, you know, security systems in general with the app, with text notifications, it really gives you the ability to manage your business and not feel like you have to be there so much. So when somebody disarms a security system this morning, I get a push notification telling me who was the first one to the office this morning.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, speaking of that, just in kind of summarizing or, you know, maybe expanding on what's your range of services? I don't know if you want to get into pricing or whatever, but is there kind of a niche that you specialize in, or is there from, you know, security cameras or whatever, and or what territory do you cover? I mean, what's kind of the...
Our territory is all the way from Metro Atlanta up through North Georgia, all the way up. You know, we're basically North Georgia territory, and we do go out of state for valuable clients who want us to follow them. As far as what our niche of security service is, we consider ourselves life safety. So anything that falls in that, we do security systems monitoring, fire alarm system monitoring, video surveillance, and then access control. So all of those fall into that life safety area, and that's really our bread and butter.
Since 1973.
Yes, sir.
Well, it was great having you on the show here this morning.
Great to be here.
Yeah, there's some. I learned some additional stuff. I feel like I'm just getting a free education here if you hang out long enough, right? And so tell our listeners, what's the best way to reach out to you all?
Give us a call at 770-386-2846 or owensecurity.com.
Cool. You can call owensecurity.com.
You can still call
us. Is that a phone number? Or yeah, I'm confused. No, thanks for being here. Yeah, Justin,
enjoy
awesome.
It.
Yeah. All right. And so up next, we have a gentleman here joining us in the studio, Rio Orvac. Welcome. How are you this morning?
Yeah, good morning.
And so you tell us a little bit about your background, but we know you're 32 years as a trusted advisor to clients. You worked with Anderson Consulting in Europe. You attended a University of Oxford MBA. You already got me, man.
That's quite all right. Well,
Tell us a little bit about your background before we get into your current projects.
Sure. Well, from Anderson, I went into become a CIO of a .com, built and ran $100 million organizations. And the way it relates to our subject today, Rich, is I was a customer of SMEs. When you and I originally talked, we talked about a SME, and you said, what is a SME?
Exactly, yeah.
So we're going to deep dive into what a SME is today. And so I've been on both sides of a SME. I was a customer, and I also recommend SMEs, which is what Pilot House Advisors is we're recommenders.
And before you tell us what a SME is, was it just me? Anybody else in the audience know what a SME is? Going once, going twice. Chuck, we got a lot of intelligent, educated people here. We even have audience members. Oh, well, sure. His publicist is here. She's raising her hand. That's cheating or whatever. Yeah. So sorry there, Rio. I feel better that it wasn't just me. Yeah.
Oh, that's quite all right. So that's why I formed Pilot House Advisors, which is a new firm here in Atlanta based. And because I've seen a lot of Fortune 500s use SMEs, and again, we'll explain what that is, to what? To get successful. Everybody sees that they're very successful, right? Corporate profits are up. And the idea behind Pilot House is we want to make that available for the mid-sized businesses. Let's give them the advantage of raising profits, raising revenues, using SMEs to solve problems, and then making them more competitive. So that's why we exist, and that's why SMEs exist. So with that, you're going to ask me now, what is a SME?
Yeah,
right?
You're killing us here, the cliffhanger or whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
So obviously it's an acronym for smart, motivated executives.
No.
Well, I thought that was good. That was a good one.
That's
I
close.
Just made that up.
That's
yeah.
close.
I bet.
Close.
Wait a minute. Mike has a shot at this. Whatever.
No. I was going to put money on that, actually. Oh. I had the over-under at smart, motivated executives.
Well, see, that's what you are, Mike. Right, yeah. That's the difference.
Well, thanks for being here, Rio. We got the answer. We're good. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But actually, Mike is a subject matter expert.
Oh, okay.
It's what we would consider. We also have Dutch here. That's going to be next on the show. He's a subject matter expert. And what it really means is, to put a finer point on it, is that they bring a deep understanding and knowledge of particular subjects, methods, tools, areas of industry, markets, and technologies. So they're literally experts. Now, who are they, you ask? They're experts in lines of business, and in lines of business, they may be certain industries, they may be specific processes that they're experts in, they may be certain technologies or strategy or tactics. Many of them have certifications and are members of associations in their respective fields. So that's one of the things you want to look for when you engage one of these. They're sometimes hired in organizations, but primarily contract consultants. They're on specific initiatives or advisory roles. So that's what they are. So you see somebody walking down the hallway of a large corporation and they don't have, they've got a visitor's badge. They're either a visitor customer or they're a SME. And they're on there temporarily to solve problems. And then we want to talk about where and how SMEs are used.
Yeah, like in business, in the business application. So what would be an example of that, I guess?
Sure. Well, there's several types, first of all. One is a strategic one, dealing with planning and process and strategies. Successful entrepreneurs like Chuck Wolf here would have a particular planning session, and he would call in a SME or a specific consultant to address expansion. Acquisition, he would call Mike. Mike would do an appraisal. Mike himself is a SME, what we classify as a SME. So another is a tactical SME. They execute the strategies. They're down on the business operations side. They're down in technology. And some of these specialists are in lines of business, what we call LOBs. Now, a line of business is very simply every department in a company. So you'd look at financial, accounting, information, human resources, which Dutch specialty is, sales, customer service, marketing and advertising. Social media is huge today. It's actually a department created by a media. And supply chain and logistics. Everybody knows those two words thanks to UPS, right? So those are lines of business that have specialists in them. And yet others are vertical. A vertical industry is a specific industry, such as the automobile industry.
Okay.
Right? So then you get into what we call super SMEs. Now, what's a super SME?
That's what I want to be, yeah.
That's an elite few that have many combinations of the skills that we talked about. So they're kind of walking, talking encyclopedias when it comes to subjects within a certain vertical market or industry.
Well, what would be an example of that? Maybe we talked about Steve Jobs earlier, right? I mean,
yes,
genius, but still kind of specialized in his specific field, right?
Yes, he's considered a marketing technologist,
right?
And a marketing technologist understands what the market will take in technology. And the reason he's so good is he broke the envelope. He changed the paradigms, right? He said, hey, we're going to have a phone. It's going to be a multiple device. It's not going to do great at everything, but it gives you the ability to have multiple technologies in one device. So that's a very good example of a marketing technologist is exactly what SME category he fits in. Yes.
So now how would they, business professionals, owners, companies, organizations, what's their role in helping move the ball forward in that capacity?
No, that's a great question, Rich. They help solve almost any business issue that you and your staff is struggling with. So rather than calling your brother-in-law if you're a small businessman and getting a limited amount of knowledge, you would put together a process, which we'll get into a little bit maybe at a future show.
Okay.
We'll do a deep dive in it. And that would be, how do you engage this SME? Because the thing about SMEs is they're like doctors. They're like lawyers. They're specialists. So they do command a few dollars an hour. And you want to be careful in the selection of those. And you want to also, we're going to look into some methodologies of how do you engage them, because their value becomes very important to your business decision. So be it technology issues, they helping delivering key projects, they assist your customers, they improve your process, they raise revenue in a lot of cases. You can get a sales guru. We know about sales gurus, right?
Right.
And you get motivators. There's also raising in revenue is a whole process that you go through in a business process section, and then you have a sales expert expound upon that. So in any key impacting issue that needs solving, a SME can do. And it may be not just an individual. We may not have a Steve Jobs in our midst.
Right.
So we have to call in the what I call the Mongolian hordes, and our firm goes out to a global network of SMEs and calls in the SMEs. And this may be in our virtual world,
right?
A Skype meeting. We may have a voice meeting, but we engage those SMEs on a global basis, bringing in the best experts possible.
And how do you determine cost, whatever, for a SME? I mean, it can be all over the board.
Yes,
right?
Yes, it can. There's a couple things you want to consider that our advisors consider, and one of them, before you start, you really have to determine the true cost. So some of the things you look at is, can you quantify the problem that you're having? And our advisors help customers do this, because you just wouldn't automatically reactively know to do this. So we go through a process and we quantify the problem in dollars. We ask you, have you considered all the incremental hidden cost to this? We deal with what's called a ripple effect in most cases. So a fellow that's got a $1 billion business like Chuck Wolf, there would be a ripple effect.
Excuse me,
excuse me. Okay. Legally, yes, Chuck. That's correct. We quantify the impact. So when you start to look at this, how does it have an effect? Is it your employees? Is it your customers? Your reputation, your brand, your investors, PR? They affect valuation. So Mike comes in and he says, well, you got a terrible brand here, so that's going to affect your valuation. So you're going to get 3 times instead of 10 times earnings. So we extrapolate those true costs, and then we come in and we ask you, what would it cost to fix this one time?
Right.
And then we have a process. The next question should be, what's the process of engaging a SME so that you get the right value? Right, because it's really a matter of value. You know you're going to lay out some bucks,
right,
but you want a return on that investment. So what? And then we wrap around, what is the ROI or savings that you're going to save today? And very popular today is the interim-based contract consultant. And that's typically what SMEs are today. They jump around to different companies. They have a wealth of information either in that particular industry or in general industries. And they bring that to you. We just want to make sure that your budget's set correctly and you're thinking along the right terms when you go to engage a SME. So that leaves you with how do you get them, right?
Yeah.
We got time for that?
Yeah, quickly, yeah.
Okay. Very quickly, how you get them. There's a couple key things to consider. One is when we align SMEs, some of the best practices that we take into effect is we first start by defining exact specifications, duties. What's the real problem?
Yeah, that's probably the key thing. You have to identify what are we trying to solve, right?
Yes.
And then you have to figure a budget. Do you figure a budget first or you shop the SMEs first?
No, you figure out what the problem is what we do. Right. And then we sort by a cultural fit in most cases to make sure that SME is going to work with the executive or your team very well, make things go smoother, cost you less money. The big key is you want to use a referred SME. 95% of our SMEs across the globe are referred to us, so they're very trusted. And if you're too busy to go through the selection process, you engage a trusted agency or a consultancy, you know, similar to Pilot House, which will guarantee their work. Everything, everybody, every project is guaranteed by us. So you don't want to save money like you would on a commodity with a specialist. You go for the higher rates. You go for the higher bids because you're really after a result, and that result is given to you back in an ROI when you're dealing with an advisor from Pilot House. So if you're dealing with a good firm, trust that firm, and they'll bring you an ROI that makes the cost of that SME insignificant to the solving of the problem.
Well, it's basically kind of a, you know your business, but bring in an expert, you know, to solve whatever subject matter that you're needing to address rather than trying to do everything in-house. I mean, I think most businesses are faced with this reality of that, you know, there's so much specialization going on, right? You can't do it all, you know, yourself. So so tell our listeners what's the best way to reach out to y'all and find out more information. Yeah.
PilotHouseAdvisors.com.
Okay.
And you can contact Heather. She's on the site.
All right.
And email me at Rio@PilotHouseAdvisors.com.
And Rio is spelled
R-E-O.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, so, well, Rio, it's a pleasure having you here back in the studio and a wealth of information. And you got some, not only the experience, but now you're kind of bringing it all full circle and, you know, offering these services to folks in business organizations. But kind of, but your idea, your wheelhouse is the mid-sized companies you talked about, right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, yeah. Cool. So, again, all the information will be on our website. So thanks again for being here. And we have our anchor man we were talking about earlier. Dutch is going to bring it all home here for us, right?
Sure.
And so welcome back to the show, Dutch. How are you so far?
Good, good.
Yeah, yeah.
And now that I could call myself a SME.
I know, right? We're all going to get name tags with SME on there or whatever, yeah.
I'll have to meet with Rio afterwards to see how I could become a super SME.
Yeah, good call. So, good luck on that, yeah. So Dutch, tell us a little about yourself. Before you get into your business, you're the current founder and managing director of Executive Strategies, which you created in 94, right?
Yes.
Tell us a little backstory, kind of how that came about, but also a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Executive Strategies is a national executive search and executive coaching firm that I founded in 1994 after about 20 years in the corporate world. We cross all industries, all marketplaces on a retained basis. And in the last year and a half, we've also opened up two new service lines that are quite interesting and working out quite well. One is for executive branding. And I should say my wife has a complementary career coaching and resume service business called Career Synergies.
Yeah, I saw that on the site or whatever. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And she opened up a new service line called College to Career Coaching,
okay,
focusing on recent college grads and soon-to-be college grads. So executive branding, besides the executive search, executive coaching, executive branding, and college coaching is a critical component of our business.
And talk about careers. What are some, what are some key ingredients for resumes these days, whatever, for an effective? Because it's another, you know, part of this changing world we're living in. It's very different than what, you know, you'd used to go down to the mailbox and mail your resume off, whatever, right?
Yeah. It's all about branding. You'll hear me use the term branding a lot, as well as alignment. And I'll talk about alignment in a moment also. Okay. But it's all around branding. And it starts with understanding who you are and having self-awareness about your skills, your competencies, how you present yourself, and how other people see you. Now, to have an effective resume, first off, you want it to be short and sweet. Right. Typically no more than 2 pages, about 1,000 words. But you have to know who your audience is and what they need to know about you and in what order they need to know it. And in order to do that, you have to figure out what is your brand and then further qualify your brand throughout your resume.
Do you encourage folks to tweak or, you know, edit their resume based on the position or the specific company that they're going after? Or
you could to a degree, and there's a technique to do that.
Okay.
But
I don't want to give away all your secrets, whatever.
Basically, a core resume will stay about 90-95% the same regardless of who your audience is, because that is your value. And an individual must identify their unique value proposition and make sure they understand how to articulate that verbally when they talk to people, the elevator speech, notorious elevator speech, as well as how they relay that in words on their resume.
Mine's typically more the stairs or the escalator. But anyway, so what can we expect from an executive recruiter? I mean, some folks have heard that term kind of thrown around, but I mean, what's your claim to fame or, I guess, unique selling proposition?
Well, first off, it's important to understand that there are two types of recruiters.
Okay.
There are, and it's based on a different model that they use. The one is contingency, and the other is retained. Contingency recruiter works on volume, only gets paid if they land a candidate in a role. High volume, not necessarily depth that a retained firm does. We are a retained firm. We get to know the client inside out. We spend hours with the candidate. We are an extension of our client in terms of everything that goes on with that search. And we've qualified. We'll even use assessment tools and identify the top 3 or 4 candidates on a short list, refer them to our client, and hopefully they love all of them and hire one of them.
Right.
So
this next point about strategies for folks looking to plan their next career, we have a couple of gentlemen in the studio that are kind of not reinventing themselves, but kind of getting back into something that maybe they've done in the past. But if you're looking at like a new career or, I mean, what are some strategies if you're looking at the next move in terms of career?
Before you identify your career strategies, you have to identify your life strategies. And that's what I did 20 years ago after 20 years in the corporate world.
Right.
When I realized that...
that might have taken some time.
Division vice president of a publicly traded company at age 37. By 42, I'm looking at myself saying, why am I here?
Wow, yeah.
This isn't fun. And I always had trouble, shall I say, coloring within the lines of the corporate environment. But I was successful, so I couldn't knock it at the time.
Right.
But you have to, and that's a good way to segment into what I did as an example. I identified what I wanted my life to look like 10 years out in finite detail, of which my career was a part. And then I decided, what are my competencies after I have this vision of 10 years out, finite detail, written out, personal strategic plan. I then identified what skills and competencies I needed to get there and what I had in my tool bag, then worked on what I had in my tool bag. And, you know, as noted, the you first have to identify what your life looks like. Then you could factor and integrate your career into it.
I think people do it either opposite or don't give a lot of thought to it. It was, you know, I hear about an opportunity. That sounds good. Yeah. Whatever. Let me see if I can do that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of touched on, obviously, the subject matter here is career. But you kind of touched on that. And, you know, what percentage of our life do we spend doing our profession, our work, right? I mean, the majority of that time. And yet, it seems a lot of times just by happenstance.
Sure. And so many people are successful in the corporate world by establishing a business strategy and operating objectives. But when you ask these very successful corporate individuals, do they have a similar plan for their life? And you get a blank stare.
Right, right.
But I believe everyone should have a personal written strategic plan that includes a strategy as well as operating objectives on how you're going to get there in all phases of life, of which your career is a part.
Yeah, big part. And I mean, that's a good point because virtually everybody does have a business plan of some sort, but you don't think about a plan in terms of your, you know, where you're going with your career and your position. So we talked about the elevator pitch or elevator speech. I mean, what are some key points or some takeaways you'd leave our listeners with do's and don'ts on that, I guess, or how to go about it?
An elevator speech or an elevator pitch should be succinct, objective, short, and to the point. What we recommend, we have a process we work our clients through where the first sentence of your elevator speech should encapsulate who you are in detail, in a level of detail and objectivity that the listener can understand who you are and know how to help you moving forward. The second and third sentence further qualifies the first sentence. So many people will start out saying they're aggressive self-starters. They do this. People person, all this. But no one's ever asked me, hey, do you know an aggressive self-starter people person? But they will ask me, hey, do you know of a good CFO who knows how to manage a billion-dollar business in a labor-intensive national environment?
Right.
And that's the kind of elevator speech you need. That's succinct, that buttoned up.
And that can apply both in the actual formal interview process, as opposed to, you know, in addition to like networking and even lifestyle networking, when people are asking, you know, how can I help, you know, maybe introduce you to some folks, right?
Exactly. In fact, we have a model or process that will put an individual through that starts with how they think of themselves. It all starts at self-awareness. That then becomes the cornerstone of the resume, the executive summary of the resume, and also their elevator speech. So there's commonality between thought, what's in writing, and how you articulate who you are.
Cool. And so so this interview process, what are some points, takeaways for how would someone prepare for that?
Sure. We have a term we call align the stars.
Okay.
Identify your key competencies and write out, using the STAR methodology, situation, task, action, result, what you've done in some of those areas of your key accomplishments. And then find out what the client needs, and then align your background to what the client needs to hear. You'd be amazed how many people will try to sell you a green widget before they know what kind of widget you're looking for.
Right, yeah. Because they've got the best green widget has ever been invented. Yeah, yeah. And you're looking for a blue one.
And you're looking for a blue one.
Yeah.
But so.
So finally, talk us about establishing a unique selling or value proposition.
Sure. Okay. And that's all around. That's all around self-awareness and executive branding. As I noted, we're big on executive branding, and that's one of our new service offerings. Your value proposition starts with how you think of yourself and what makes you unique and different from other people. It may be, to use a human resource analogy, you know, there are a lot of human resource individuals out there, of course, and many of them will say the same generic thing. We align individual employee goals with corporate strategies, blah, 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 blah. But in human resources, one of your unique value propositions may be your background in labor relations, or it may be your background working with IPOs or private equity firms, or working with a national labor-intensive, geographically dispersed environment. So come up with what makes you different and unique.
And if you can
sell that.
Yeah, and if you can cite a specific story or whatever, right, or a success story, I think people relate to that more than just open-ended, you know, exactly. General terminologies, right?
It's all around branding, self-awareness, and alignment.
Good stuff, man. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So how would our listeners get in touch with you? What's the best way to reach out?
Sure. Our website is esitalent.com, and you can reach me at hearl@esitalent.com. And my wife is careersynergies.com.
Okay.
So.
And we'll post that all on the website as well. And Dutch, it was great having you in the studio here this morning. And to all of our folks here, we've had another great episode of Buckhead Business Radio X. And we hope to see everyone next week. And tune in for another exciting episode of Buckhead Business Radio X. Rich Casanova here, signing off. Have a great week.